And when you talk about purpose, I think for me, what I first had was a vision. And, you know, I'm a big believer that a lot of us have sight, but we don't all have vision. And I think people are like, oh, how come you got married so early? I was like, you know what, actually, if I really want to get to where I want to get to, I need a life partner. I can't just be. The one thing I say about me and my wife is that we have a foundation of friendship.
That's it.
We were friends before we were dating. And guess what? Even when we are in this marriage here, husband and wife, we never forget to be friends. Ha! We never forget to be friends because we were friends before.
Mm.
So even sometimes I might not like her as a wife because, you know, what she wants to do for these children and what I want to do might be two different things.
Yeah.
But at bedtime, we will always remember, we are always friends. We are always friends.
I'm all about purpose.
Yeah.
I'm all about people knowing what they're meant to do as opposed to just doing anything that comes along. How did you journey into the financial sector? More specifically, what would you define as your drive or purpose at the moment?
I think that changes over time. Do you know what I mean? I think the big thing for me was to make my mum proud. I have my mum and father here, but I'm the eldest child. You know when you're the eldest child and you're Nigerian? So the pressure is a lot. So obviously for me, I knew, and I didn't do too well in school or grades. So because I didn't do great at school or have the best grades, it was always something that I felt like I've got to achieve. My mum always believed in me. She always had faith. Emmanuel, you're my passion. And for me, it was like, okay, cool. I've got to do this. I've got to achieve this. And growing up, I grew up in Tower Hamlets, East London. Mm-hmm. And so although I was on a council estate, there's a famous place in Tower Hamlets, and it's called Canary Wharf. And I grew up right next to it. So the council estate, the area I lived in, is a place called Limehouse. And we have the same postcode as Canary Wharf. So imagine living in a council estate in poverty, and your postcode is the same as all these million-pound banks, and some of the richest people in the world are literally going to work in the same postcode as you live in. And your lives are totally different. And when you talk about purpose, I think for me, what I first had was a vision. And, you know, I'm a big believer that a lot of us have sight, but we don't all have vision. And for me, I had a vision. I looked out my window. I could see them buildings in Canary Wharf, and I was like, I got to be there. So when people ask me, why do I work in finance? I work in finance because I live in Canary Wharf. I looked out the window and I saw finance buildings, and I said, I got to get in one of those buildings. And that became my vision, became my drive. And by 22, I made it happen.
Hold on, before we even go any further, you said something, I'm still processing it. You said something about sight and vision. Say that line again, because it threw me off.
Yeah, so a lot of a lot of us have sight, but we don't all have vision. So I always give the example. So even that Canary Wharf example, imagine how many other people lived on the council estates. Yeah. They looked out their window. They saw the same buildings I saw and never got any inspiration. All they saw were buildings or banks or businesses. But for me, I saw where I needed to be. I saw my direction. I saw my purpose, where I had to go. I would need to be in one of those buildings. And so that became my drive. And I always thought some people will see wood, somebody else will see coffee table. It's there's a big difference. We can look at the same thing, but see something completely different. And for me, especially sometimes in life, other people are not going to see it because it's not their vision. Do you understand? Sometimes you get this idea or you've got this dream or you've got this thing that you want to achieve and you want to get validation from people. And you're going, oh, what do you think? And people are like, nah, I can't see it, man. Oh, no, you know, it's hard for us. Or you know, people for us don't do that or don't get to go there. Or, you know, we don't have the options or we don't have enough funding or whatever the excuse or the reason is. People will knock it down. But you always got to remember that that's your vision. That's why you can see it. And people will catch up. People are telling me, like, man, got there. When I got there now, everybody was celebrating. Oh, well done. Of course, they'll catch up afterwards. But on the journey there, people are complaining, oh, we don't see you no more, you don't come out. People are complaining, oh, you hide away, oh, you've become stush, oh, you think you're too good, oh, you haven't got time for your friends, you're not a good friend. You hear all of that. When you bust, all of these same people will be the ones claiming you to, oh, yeah, that's my boy, you know, we went to school. Like, do you understand what I'm trying to say? From day. Like, that's my guy, I could call my man right now. You know, like, that energy. Do you know what I mean? They were giving that energy. These times they will be cussing you beforehand, but when you blow, it all changes. So you can't wait for people. Like, I'm a big believer, like, you know, people come and people go. I never want to hold on to nobody past their time. There are some people that are meant to be in your life for that season, and you appreciate that, you love those memories, and you got love for them, but you go in a different direction. And that doesn't mean that when you don't meet in 4, 5, 10 years time, you can't still kick it and laugh and remember about the past, but you go in different directions. And for me, there's a point where we call it like a hero complex. When you come from the hood and you come from nothing, you want to save everybody. But one thing that I always remember, when you're in a plane, they always tell you, if an emergency, put your air mask on first before you go to put somebody else's. You see, if you don't put your air mask on first and you go to help somebody else, you run out of air, then you can't help them either. Now you both did. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. And sometimes with us is that we come from somewhere where we just want to help. We just want to give back. We just want to help our people. But you need to help yourself first. You need to be in a position of strength to be able to carry the load to help other people. Because helping people is a weight. And if you help people at a time when you don't have the right strength, they can only pull you down, even though your intentions are good. And so for me, it was a case of I was so focused, so driven to achieve this goal and get there. And by 22, I became the youngest financial advisor in Barclays in the country. Do you know how many there's over 1,000 financial advisors in Barclays, and I was the youngest, coming from the hood with poor GCSEs, there's so many reasons why I shouldn't make it, but I did. And I always use that Nelson Mandela line, it always seems impossible until it's done.
The youngest at 22?
Yeah, the youngest financial advisor in the country in Barclays at age 22. All my colleagues were like 40s, 50s, all of them could have been my dad. And we had one woman in our team who could have been my mum. All that age. And it's like, I'm now their colleague. And I think people are like, oh, how come you got married so early? Like, I'm around big people. And this is something that I think the younger generation, I think they're getting it now. But if you really want to achieve and you want to get somewhere in life, go chill with some older people. Mm. Like, when you chill with older people, the shortcuts, I always tell people, yeah, so when I was 22, and my area manager, he's like, yo, E-man, I want you to go and sit down with every single one of the advisors. I'm just going to book in their diary and go to their branches and just learn. Bro, I had my own branch and I used to do little bits in here, but I spent the first 3 months just going to other people's branches. And one of the guys I went there, he was really, really good, doing real well. And he told me about this product, and he's like, look, This is the product. Based on the current climate, tell people, look, all you got to do, boom, boom, boom. I repeated what this guy said. That month, I was top salesperson. Bro, I could have spent 2, 3, 4 years trying to learn what he taught me in one day. What he taught me in one day. And this is the problem. Sometimes we are trying to act like we're the first person to achieve or to do what we're doing. You got to remember, somebody's already done that long time. Mm. Go sit with somebody and find out. So he told me about that. Then the next brother said, listen, when you're doing sales, you've got to understand about the environment. So he had plugins. This is early when plugins weren't really, he had a plugin in his room so that when you walked into his office, it smelled completely different from the bank. So clients no longer felt like they were in a bank. They were in his office. They were in his room. And now they relaxed. It's so much more easier to sell to somebody when they don't feel like they're being sold. You see, when you feel like you're in a bank, you feel like they're trying to make money from you.
Yeah.
But when you come into this office, we were in Barclays, his office, he had light in to make the room green. So you're not even thinking that you're in Barclays because it's not blue no more. You're seeing chilling. Green. The smell is different. Sits down. He's like, I don't touch a pen or paper for the first 20 minutes. All I do is look at them, talk to them, understand why they're here, what their motivations, what drives them. And I used that to get the sale. And I said, bro, this is game. And I feel like this new generation of young people get it. Like, I get messages all the time, like, yo, E-man, can I just ask you this? Or can I just find out this? Can you? And they realize it's one of the biggest gems you can get. If you can find somebody that does what you want to be doing, just reach out to them and trust me. You will save yourself years of the process just learning from someone that's already gone.
Listen, there's so much to unpack in that. because I'm interested in terms of how, of course, you developed, you have people around you, but let's talk about the Tower Hamlets email. What was that boy like? Let's not even go to the man yet. What was that boy like? Because someone listened to you right now, they say this guy's had it screwed on ever since, you know, he's always been purposeful and all that, but what was the young, let's say your teenage years, what was young Eman like?
Bro, look, I always tell people, when I was young, yeah, bro, I was, like, people think I'm funny now, like, bro, I was funny. You're then, that like, guy. I was that guy, like, I could hang, like, man will bust joke, and obviously, them times, remember, I've got the wrong clothes, so I didn't get my first pair of, my uncle got me a pair of Adidas when I was 15, so that was year 10, I'll never forget, year 10. So the first 4 years of school, I'm wearing Aribas, I'm wearing US Brass. From a distance, it looked like kickers. But when you come close, you know that it's not kickers. I was wearing the wrong brands. I used to get ripped. So because I used to get smoked, I'm like, if you know you're going to get ripped, you've got to have comebacks. So I used to have to prepare myself, like learn comebacks. When people are coming for me, I will come for them back. And I used to just have fun. I used to play basketball. I thought I'm gonna be a basketball player. I played for the region. So I played for East London, and we won the National League. I played rugby. So I played rugby at a really high level because I was really fast. I did athletics, 100, 200. So I thought I was gonna be a sports star. Something's got a bus because I'm mad good at all this stuff. I'm quick, and everyone likes me. I'm just a likable guy. My grades was atrocious. It is so funny. This is why I talk about, if you wanna make God laugh, tell him your plans. It is so ironic that me, I would grow up and I would be spending my days teaching and educating people when I did so poor in the education system. I thought I'm gonna be a sports star. I used to miss lessons. I used to have teachers that used to just, okay, yeah, just I'll just give you the answers. Just look, you understand? I was that guy. I was in the local newspaper all the time. Like, everyone thought I was gonna bust. So for me, I didn't even take this education serious. It's only because my dad was just on, you know, Nigerians. Like, he said, did I bring you to this country to play?
Excellent.
To play. Can you imagine? Like, I used to come home with medals, trophies. This guy was like, for playing. I can't take it serious. Do you know what I've been through in life to get to see this England? And you want to show me that you're winning medals for playing. Ha! It's against everything that he said. And then obviously I used to go to church a lot. So my parents are big Christians. Like my dad's an elder in the church. Like he's devoted. My dad is, church and him is just, he wake up five o'clock every morning. Even me, I remember when I used to go out, I'll come home at 1 o'clock in the night. My parents would be doing midnight prayer for me. God, please help our son. The devil is trying to take it. Like, you understand? Like, them type of parents, like, they don't play. Like, they don't, God is everything. So Sundays, so imagine sometimes I'm meant to play basketball or whatever on a Sunday, and I'll have to miss church. Ooh, always a problem. Sometimes my coaches will have to come and call and beg my mum to let me go. Beg. Otherwise, I can't play. Sundays is for God. One day in the week, for God. Like, it's not a game.
Oh, my day. This is so many memories coming back to me, man.
Trust me. So, imagine that. So, what I always tell people, though, is that sometimes you can have the skills, but you're not using them in the right environment. So at school, I was the joker. I made everybody laugh in class, crack jokes. Even sometimes, you know, you crack jokes and the teacher is struggling, like the teacher is trying not to laugh, not to encourage everyone. But so she would just kick you out. She would just kick you out. Like, she'd be like, Manny, get out. Just get out. Like, because she's like, you're doing too much. She has to stay professional. You're doing too much. So, but I always tell people, like, when I learned the financial advice, and I added the personality that used to get kicked out of class in the right environment, I became one of the best salespeople in Barclays in the country. And sometimes the skill, sometimes we have a skill, but we don't appreciate the skill. And that's because we haven't put it into the right environment for it to really, and that's what I always tell people, what comes naturally to you? What do you do? And you don't have to think about it. You can just do. Where can you put that? Where can you put that skill? We talk about Bill Gates saying he always likes to hire people that are smarter than him and people that are lazy. You're smarter than him. I always want people to remember, you don't have to have all the skills. If you got a good enough business, you can pay someone to do what you don't have, number one. Number two, people that are lazy. Because people that are lazy always find a shortcut. Mm. It's a skill. If you use your laziness properly, I know people who are very lazy. If you use it properly, use it properly. Now, I know people that are doing multiple contracts because they've learned how to do something that will take somebody 8 hours. They've learned how to do it in 4. They will now take 2 contracts and eat 2 money in the right environment. Mm. And so for me, it's about what are your skills? What are the things that what is given to you? And how do you make that work for you? Too many of us are ready to work for others. And that's what the education system taught me, tried to teach me. And because I didn't fit into that mold, I didn't do too well in those grades. I didn't fit into the mold that they wanted. But I'm willing in life. And people need to understand that them grades, they're important, but also know your learning style. The reason I wasn't getting the right grades at school wasn't because I wasn't clever. It's because I didn't know my learning style. The way I was taught wasn't the way that my mind works best. And when I had to study for my professional exams, I sat down with an actual trainer and we learned my learning style, how I retain information. And all the tests were 70% pass, mate. You had to get 70% to pass. And I passed all the exams. I'd never seen 70% in my life beforehand. I learned my learning style. And I had my motivation. I wanted to be a financial advisor. Sometimes we are in environments where we are unmotivated. So even if you have the skill, are you motivated to do the work? I tell people now, I get to do what I love and get paid for it. It don't feel like work because I love what I do and I do what I love.
Bro, listen, if there was a TED Talk, that would be it. This is where everyone just claps. You don't even need to say thank you for listening. I'm inspired, and I love the way you're being so honest about it, because I think it's one of those things where people overcomplicate it. I'm very interested to know the mindset over the years. You mentioned something where over the years people need to come to terms that you don't have to be with everyone you grew up with, and all the people that talk you down will be the same people that cheer for you when you make it. I'm interested to know, because I know how I can sort of gauge how it was in terms of, like, being honest, the background, the limitations, expectations, and things like that. How did you fight through all of that? So going from teenagers to young adults, and then a man. I classify a man as small mental. I'm sure you agree with that.
Yeah.
How did you make that transition over the years?
I think for me, it was having core accountability partners. And this is where we talk about who do you surround yourself with. So I've got a core group of friends from Sunday school. We've grown up together. So that really helped me, number one, because you've got people that are your age or in your age group, but you're not. We see when you go to school, you'll go different secondary schools from primary school. So you'll lose some of your friends. You'll go different college. You go, like, now college is all in one, but them times college was separate. So you go to a different college, then you go to a different university. So by the time you lose contact with a lot of your friends from back in the day. Absolutely. But I had this group from Sunday school where we grew up together. We still see each other every Sunday. We still keep in contact. And we're going through the same things. And even in a group of friends, you still gravitate to a certain number of them. A few, even within them, everyone has their go-to person. Even though we can all talk to one another, there's still certain ones. If you need something, you know who you're going to call. If you want some advice or whatever, you know you've got your personal person within your group. And so I had that. And for me, it really helped me, because one of the things that I always say is that if your friend can't challenge you and can't tell you when you're doing wrong, they're not really your friend. And people are like, oh, Eman, what are you talking? Like, if your friend does not feel comfortable correcting you, as if they correct you, your friendship might end. So therefore, they don't feel like they're in a position to correct you. You're not really friends. You're not really friends. You understand? Because when it comes to friendship, I always tell people, even in relationship, my wife, I didn't focus on the good things about my wife. I focused on the bad parts about my wife. And this is a mindset that a lot of people, everyone's different. But for me, it was not about the good things because everybody's got good. She's beautiful. Yes, you will see somebody beautiful tomorrow. Beautiful will never stop. Oh, she's got a good shape. She's got a good this. She's got manners. It doesn't stop. It's everywhere. What I need to know is, what are her bad points and can I handle them? Are they okay? Because some people's bad points is like, for example, there are some women that, you know, they can lose their temper and shout. Unfortunately, I can't be around that type of woman. My woman can't be barking at me. I don't bark at nobody. So nobody can't, unless you're my mum. That's the only woman in my life that can ever bark at me and I'll just swallow it. Even till today, I got 4 kids. She still is my mum. She can't, you know, mama is mum. Yeah. So it's okay. But other than that, like, there are some things that I know that I got to focus on. What are you? And you see my wife's bad points? I can swallow them all day long. So I know, even at her worst, I can still love her. I can still love her. I can still handle her at her worst. And it's the same thing with my friends. If my people, the people that I surround that say they love me, they want me to win. If they see man doing a madness and they can't correct man, no, we can't be. We're not really friends. This is just for convenience. This is just because we've known each other since back in the day. Because if your fear is more about, if you feel like if you tell me that what I'm doing is wrong, and because of that, I'm now going to tell you, oh, we can't be friends anymore. That friendship is fake. It is fake. My brothers can tell me, E-man, you're moving mad, big man. You're moving mad. And you know what? I will swallow that. I will take that off. As much as it might hurt my ego. And let's be honest, as man them, the ego thing, we got to try and chill it. We got to try and reduce it. It's spoiling a lot of our blessings, this ego thing. And we'll get onto that. Because I've been watching all this thing about, oh, I'm an alpha, or you're a beta. Or... we'll get onto that because it's a nonsense.
It's interesting you said that, because that was what we were going to go into. Because I like what you were talking about in terms of people being real and not shying away from telling the truth. And that's exactly the point I was going to allude to. That's why I asked you, how did you make that transition? Because what I'm finding now is, do you know what, I'm going to say it as it is. Guys that are coming up and saying, my name's soft, I'm not soft,
yeah,
don't chat to me like that. But at the same time, they'll come back to you and say, but you saw me doing this wrong, why don't you come talk to me? So my thing is, because a lot of the guests that we've had here, we've talked about what does masculinity mean to them? And how do we break down toxic masculinity? In terms of something you mentioned there, ego, that is at the bottom of toxic masculinity every single time. I'm interested to know, firstly, what does being a man really mean? And how can we break down the wrong conception of manhood?
You know what? For me, like, being a man is not, there's not one way to be a man. Okay. Do you know what I mean? I don't feel like there's one way. Like you said, man will say, oh, you're too soft, you're beta, and I'm alpha. Like, as in, that is complete nonsense. Let me tell you, because the man will talk about I'm alpha, but be mad gossiping. So I don't understand. That's not an alpha trait. It's not an alpha trait. You sit there and you're bashing women, talking about, yeah, I did this and da 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 da. That's not a man trait. Man don't move like that. Do you understand? Real men don't even need to talk about, oh yeah, I had this girl, I did this, or yeah, me and her did that. That's not it. Talking down on women, talking down on other men, wishing downfall of other men. Talk about I'm alpha, but that's not how men behave. For me, a man, for me, as a man, what I try to do is know what I need to do for my wife. I know what role I need to play in regards to what it takes to be a good man for my wife, what it takes to be a man for my family and my friends, and the example that I want to give. And that's about the type of person that I am. For me, being a man is about being a good person. Being a good person in a way And knowing that there's a difference, knowing that, yes, I may be stronger, I might have more strength than a woman, but that doesn't mean that I need to be feared. And it's about, for me, it's how I carry myself, it's how I represent myself, it's how I walk into rooms, it's how I make other people around me feel. As a man, I want to make sure when I'm in the presence of a woman, she feels safe, she feels secure, she feels like she has somebody that she can rely on. To me, those are manly traits. To me, that's what it's, even as a man, when I'm with my brothers, I can uplift them, I can empower them, I can show them that there are other, I can be a support to them, I can be a comforter. Sometimes we don't talk about that, but are you able to comfort your brethren? Or when your brethren's down, are you telling them, "Oh, bro, don't cry, bro. Come on, man, come." Like, do you have substance? Can you really add value? For me, as a man, I must be adding value to those that are around me. Whether it's my children, whether it's my wife, whether it's my family, whether it's my friends. And as a man, I don't know what's happened to this generation. I don't know what these women have done. But for me, as a man, I must provide. And provide is not just financially. Provide is emotionally. Mm. Provide is with my time and my presence. Let me tell you something. One thing I will say is that being a man, to me, my presence is worth more than my money.
Expand on that. That's an interesting point.
For me, as a man, in today's society, I was talking the other day to my wife and saying, listen, this Christmas, these kids are really going to enjoy Christmas, as in getting dressed up, opening presents, lights, because you know what? They need their innocence. Because this world are going to try and make these kids become adults when they should still be kids. You want them to make big people decisions. You want to tell them that they don't have to be a boy or a girl. You want to make them become adults when they're just children, enjoying life. And for me, the only way that's going to happen is not with my money. It's going to happen with my presence. The only impact I can truly have with my children is with my presence. Yes, my money needs to pay bills and needs to provide a roof. But guess what? Even if you were living in a one bed, all seven of us were living in a one bed, my kids would still be happy to have my presence.
Love that. That's powerful. And there's so many things to say, and I hope time permits me to do so. One thing I want to go, and please, we're going to come back to this point, just remind me as well, the issue of men identifying their worth or their value with their money or not, or lack of or thereof. But I'm interested to, before we skip that, I want us to go back to, if you're okay with talking about it, the progression from singleness to marriage.
Yes.
Because, like you said, you don't know, you said something interesting that you got married at a young age. But before we get to the marriage age, like the mentality, because it's a different mindset from just thinking about yourself and thinking about someone you want to build a future with and actually make that commitment. What was that transition like from accomplished financial advisor? Because I'm sure you didn't get married at 22, was it?
No, about 26.
26. So that from 22 to 26, what was that like in terms of meeting your wife and obviously your kids?
Yeah, I think, like I said, again, a lot of us have a lot of scars that we carry around. And for me, obviously, like I said, I didn't dress well, not well to, you know, society standards. I didn't have money, so I couldn't go on dates. I couldn't go cinema. Even them times cinema was like £1, £1.50. I didn't have money to go cinema. My brethren used to pay for me to go to the cinema, and stuff like that, because my parents just trying. Do you know what I mean? My dad was just on the come up. My mum was just working hard, just trying. So every money they had to do their own thing. So, and obviously for me, I grew quite quickly, especially size-wise. So they're always spending money on clothes and, you know, these types of things. And for me, because of that, I didn't get on well with the ladies. Like, I love them, but they didn't love me. Do you know what I mean? And again, these are scars that you have. I went to a boys' school, and then obviously, after that, I went to a mixed school, mixed college, and that's when I really started to, you know, meet with women and so forth. And I got a girlfriend, and she taught man about perfume. I went to a boys' school. Man wasn't spraying no perfume to no boys' school.
You're drinking for perfume.
Dude, come on. So
put your blazer, times, quick time.
Put your blazer, come on, just spray it, you understand? So, man, and then you got the white marks all on your... It's a madness, like, how we are moving. But that's, like, she taught me about that. But she also then taught, like, man was still doing stuff like, you know, just farting anyhow, like, just... When we went to a boys' school, we fought and laughed, you know what I mean? And like, she taught man about swagger and how to approach a woman and what to, how to talk and da 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 da. And so, again, I'm a learner. So once I've learned, I'm like, okay, cool. So now, add that to now being 22. I got a brand new BMW from Company Car. I got Barclays giving man suits. Plus, I'm buying my own suits as well. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And I know I got a little swag now. Bro, I had girls in the bank that were onto man. They ain't no black financial advisor, let alone one from the hood. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I had the girls in Barclays on man. I had the girls in church on man. I had the girls that I met outside on man. Even like friends that I went to school with all of a sudden fell in love. Like, it was just crazy. And me, I was just loving it because, again, I had these scars of being rejected and not being desirable. So now all of a sudden I am getting girls. And again, by that time, I had braces. So I had my braces them time. So I closed the gap in my teeth. Like, everything. I was wearing contact lenses, no gloves. Bro, haircuts every week. Like, it was crazy them times. You know what I mean? And so I'm getting loads of female attention. I'm loving it. And I'm just going from girl to girl to girl to girl. And it was ruining. It was ruining me. Because I had fast tracked. I was 22 and, you know, I'm financial advisor, doing amazing. But now, I'm not focusing on, oh, I've got this big client tomorrow, let me prepare. I'm not thinking about, let me do some research, where am I going to find some more clients? Oh, let me go do some networking. All I'm doing is going to work, finish work, girl. Going to work, even at work, there's girl at work. So now you're consumed. And so now I started to realize, I started to slow down.
Mm.
All of a sudden, I'm like, I'm not achieving what I need to be achieving. And then when I started speaking to the older, and this is again, when I got the olders around me, one of them I became really close with, his name was Shane. And he became like my mentor. And funny enough, I went to Egypt with a girl. And when I get there, I go out to Egypt with a girl, I'm out there. Who's in Egypt? Shane is in Egypt with his missus and his kid.
Married missus.
Yeah.
Okay.
With his missus. And I'm like, wow, what are the chances? So we just bump into each other out in Egypt. Like, I'm like, this is crazy. What are the chances? So we're out there now and we're talking. And he was telling me, you know what, bro? Manny, like, I don't think this is the one for you, you know? Just the way the vibe and da-da-da-da-da. And he was right. He was very right.
You respect that opinion at that time.
Yes. It's a shame. This is my role model. This is like, he's giving me game all the time. He's teaching me stuff all the time. So I know he had my best interests at heart.
Okay.
So, which was cool, because I'm glad that he said that. And I was like, okay, cool. I respect you for saying that. So anyway, after we went out there and I talked to him, I see him with his missus, da 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 da. And I see him with his son, and his missus, basically, he had got divorced. Mm. His missus had actually cheated on his previous wife had cheated on him with another man. And then he, because he was the main breadwinner, he had to leave the house, but he was paying for the house, for the missus to live with the kids and another man in that house, while still having to pay for his own house. And his own, like, his expenses was crazy. And when he was just dropping game on me about relationships and making sure you find the right one and stuff like that, I was like, you know what, actually, if I really want to get to where I want to get to, I need a life partner. I can't just be, because I'm the type of person, the reason that, like, even a lot of these girls that I used to date, like, even now, they still follow man, they still talk positively about man. Because I'm the type of person, when I'm with you, I'll make you feel special. I will invest in you. I will see how I can uplift you, how I can... Why am I doing that to multiple women?
Okay.
All that energy I'm putting into multiple women, they can't all be my wife. And that energy, I'm not putting into myself and I'm not putting into my life partner. And I was like, if I'm really going to get to where I want to get to, I need to cut this out. I need to stop having to care about this different woman here. Going, man, spending, I'm a financial advisor, spending hundreds a night taking girls out. Because you know me, I'm Nigerian. I got to pay for everything.
This is back then, about 10
years ago. This is back then. Yeah, 10 years ago. I'm paying for everything. Taking these girls out, giving them the wine and dine, and And I'm like, it doesn't make sense. I know better. So me now seeing that and getting that game from Shane, I was like, okay, let me settle down. Let me start looking for a wife. Mm. When I found my wife, I brought her around Shane, and he was like, this is the one. Yeah. And still to today, we don't live too far from each other. My wife still talks to his missus and stuff like that. So it's good to have people around you that can feel free. And that's the problem, again, with the ego. Mm. It's a lot of us have so much ego that no one can tell us something. We can't hear anything. I'm the type of person, anyone can tell me something. I can take it. I don't care whether you're successful or you're unsuccessful. If you got some tip or you got something that you want to share, share it. It's a free country. Share what yours is. I can hear it. If I feel like I can benefit from it, I can take it. If not, it's gone. Too many of us are carrying around other people's thoughts on us while they're sleeping. That's one thing I always, bruv.
That makes it harder. That's a shot right there.
Bro, bear, it's true. When you think there are people that are streaming right now, vexed, they can't sleep because they're so angry about what somebody said. And that person is snoring. They've gone, they're enjoying life. And you're here stewing about what somebody else. And this is why we can't give control to other people. And this is why I'm so happy that I really became close to God. I really got faith and really understood that when Tupac said, only God can judge me, like a lot of the time I'm like, bro. You're swearing, you're cussing in your lyrics, you're out here having fights. I don't understand your behavior, yet you still talk about God. But I get it. Only God can, like you, sometimes you got to have that mindset. Only God can judge me. So I cannot care or move for what you have to say, because the same people that will praise you today will curse you tomorrow. So I must always remember, only God can judge. I only care what God has to say about me, about my life. Yes, my wife, yes, I do absolutely care what she has to say, and I take it in, and I try to be the best husband I can. But at the end of the day, even sometimes, my wife might not appreciate what I'm doing, and she may feel like, oh, E-man, I don't like how you do this or do that. But God knows my heart. God knows where I do and where I'm doing and what I'm doing it from, where it's coming from. And we've had times. Well, it's come to me, you know what, E-man, you're right. I know we argued about it. I know we didn't. I didn't really get what you were saying, but I can see it. And I appreciate that I have a partner that can be honest and can be vulnerable. Sometimes you can't be vulnerable. You think I'm afraid to cry in front of my wife? I cry in front of my wife all the time. Who else? That doesn't make me any less of a man. That doesn't make me beta, not alpha. What? Man will act, oh, you're acting emotional. Bear or man are emotional. That's why you're fighting all the time. Bear man fight. That is an emotional state. You're not in control of your emotions. Someone can say, well, I remember in school, someone say your mum. Man are ready to fling table.
And that says so much.
Come on. Man are ready to go all out. And I remember my mum telling me, don't allow anybody to have control of your emotions. If somebody can control your emotions, they can control you, because they will know what they can say and what they can do when they want to make you feel in a certain way or move in a certain way or behave in a certain way. You must control your emotions.
Love that, man. This is an interesting question I wanted to ask you ever since I started pondering on having you on a podcast. From what you said now, it seems like you were financially wise in your decision-making from the age of 22 to 26 when you got married. What were also experiences? Like you said, you got married young, fairly in terms of average age for people in our society. What would you say to men? Because it's coming to a point where, I don't know, I know many have their own thoughts and own ideas about it, but for men that are in a position where they don't feel they're man enough or they're ready, they want to save up, they want to be hit a financial state or something like that before they finally take that step to build a relationship or get into a serious relationship. What would you say to men to deal with that? Because it's not easy, because someone can listen to you and say, well, you had yourself sorted by 22. How would you advise against that for men?
I would say, number one, there is a financial standard that needs to be in place before you can start as a man. I believe there is a financial standard, but that doesn't mean, like, I feel like you can't be dating if you're not, if you don't have no income, you can't be dating. It doesn't make sense. Like, so you need to have a job. You need to, yes, there are a basic foundation. But I think more importantly, you need to have a plan in what you're trying to do and where you're trying to go. Because for me, that then allows, if you know what you're about and what you're trying to do and where you're trying to go and what you're trying to achieve, it becomes easier to then partner with somebody else, because you can find someone going in the same direction as you, or prepared to go in the same direction as you. And sometimes that's the part that we miss, especially as Christians. We're all unevenly yoked and da da da. Bruv, sometimes where I'm at today, I'm in a different place in a year or two. And sometimes what we do is we say, oh, you're not ready at this point, right here, right now, so we cannot be together, or we cannot... Bruv, you can... Whatever happened to just talking and being friends? Like, the one thing I say about me and my wife is that we have a foundation of friendship.
That's it.
We were friends before we were dating. And guess what? Even when we are in this marriage here, husband and wife, we never forget to be friends. Ha! We never forget to be friends, because we were friends before. So even sometimes I might not like her as a wife, because, you know, what she wants to do for these children and what I want to do might be two different things.
Yeah.
But at bedtime, we will always remember, we are always friends. We are always friends. I don't think people understand the difference. You see, me and my wife, we are friends. We banter, we get along, we enjoy each other's company. And we must never forget, doing husband and wife and doing daddy and mommy, that we are friends. And a lot of these relationships are based on the physical, okay? A lot of these relationships are based on the excitement. Oh, let's go to Paris. Ah, can you relax? Can you just relax yourselves? All of this excitement, you watch too many movies and this social media love. If you love me, let's go to Holland and put lock on a bridge. Or is that love?
Her, innit?
Come on. Is that love? For me, we have to understand about friendship. And can you be friends? Do you even like each other's company? Me and my wife, listen. My kids can be around us, and me and my wife can just sit there and kiki all day, and the kids will be thinking, rah, are these guys, are they the adults or are they the kids? Bruv, we enjoy each other's company. Do you understand? Like, that is a fundamental. And I feel a lot of these relationships, you're not giving yourself the chance to realize, do you enjoy spending time together non-sexually? It's important. Non-sexually. Because that will fade. I'm telling you, listen, I just always love to keep things real. I'm a man. Man had multiple chicks. I was there. So when I've got married, my sex drive is much higher. My wife hasn't even done anything. So I'm here. I'm used to 3-4 women. Is my one wife going to replace 3 women? She's not 3 women. She's one woman. And even after over time, as much as I have a high sex drive, there are other things that can replace it. Do you know, sometimes me and my wife, instead of having sex, we will just lie down, we will just cuddle, we will just talk, and we will just fall asleep. Will I wake up roasting? No. That has been satisfied. There are other ways. And even sometimes, I practice sometimes not having sex, even though I'm married. I practice not having sex, especially when I've got big projects, when I need to really make my mind and have, you lot see all these videos. You think all these videos just come from thin air? Sometimes my mind has to be open. Mm. I have to sit back and I can't, this is what I do. This is my thing. I want to be focused. And so sometimes I have to deny myself, even the pleasures that I enjoy, I have to deny myself. And these things are good because guess what? When she had baby, I got 4 kids. Do you know some? One of the times, one of my kids, I didn't have 6 months. Nah. 6 months. Do I ever think I would ever, that would ever come from my lips? Me will survive 6 months. Me, if not 4 days, I'll be shaking like a drug addict. What? Now 6 months. But it's the bigger picture. It's understanding what you're doing it for. It's beyond you. And that's another thing. When it comes to marriage, and this is something I had to learn, we are extremely selfish as individuals. And that's how we are supposed to be. I'm not saying it as a negative thing. I'm saying it as you think of yourself. Because that's all you have to worry about. When you get into marriage, it is completely different.
Yeah.
There are things that you justifiably want to do and should be able to do that you will need to deny yourself for the bigger picture. And you don't realize how many, even like now, the area that I live in, I loved the area I lived before. It was so easy for me to get to work. But the area I live in now is because of the schools that I want my kids to go to. Do you understand? Like, I have every right to live in the other area.
Mm.
But the schools in that area weren't great. So I have to make that sacrifice and say, okay, it's going to take me longer. But I know why. Okay, like now my wife, she does cakes. I could see that she wasn't being fulfilled through cakes. So we have been on a journey to find out. And now she is retrained to start doing something else. That required me to be at home. To put these kids to bed while she's on course studying in the night. That required me to help her and spend time with her practicing questions. And I had to spend time investing in her dream.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're so one-sided. Then you wonder why your woman is bored, why she's not interested, why she doesn't want to spend. What are you doing for her? What are you doing to uplift and empower? And do you understand the joy and blessing that I always tell people? My wife spends more time with my kids than I do. So my job is, I see a lot of good dads that spend bare time with their kids. But actually, not only do you need to spend, time with your missus. I need to be putting in the energy into my missus. Because if my missus is sad and feels lonely and feels unappreciated, what energy is she going to put into my kids? Sad, lonely, and unappreciated. But if my missus feels empowered, feels loved, and feels supported, what energy is she going to put into my kids? So it is so important when we talk about the role and responsibilities of a man. That's my job. My job is to empower my wife, not to put her down, not to give her allowance and make her feel like, you must come to me, I own you. Why? Because of bride price, because of dowry. Nonsense. My wife is an asset to me. Yeah. I always tell people, you can see me now and see me on the television and see me all over the place. That for me to start this business, it took my wife to tell me, E-man, you can do it. She said, stop waiting for other people. Register a business and go. 4 years later, we're here. Because my wife, she's a part of the business. She's a part of the dream. She understands the focus. But I can't be out here preaching to the world, trying to empower the world and get them to be right with their money. And my wife feels lonely, rejected, feels unimportant. That's not a man.
These are things that you don't, you can read something, but it's different from when you hear someone's experience it live.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to know, because this is a very important conversation that people need to constantly have. What was the inspiration to becoming this man that you are? We know we talked about managing, we talked about the making shame. And what was your relationship with your dad? Let's focus on that because I want to see how people can learn, maybe from skills or something that they could just apply to their current relationships or past relationship with their fathers.
I think for me, my relationship with my dad, when we were younger, he wasn't around because he had to study. So my dad was, and again, sometimes as a child, this is why when I talk about the importance of presence, my dad had to study to be an accountant. So he used to go to the library during the day and then he would do security at night. So I would only really see him on really Sunday to go to church. It's when I always remember seeing him. And my mum was just there for me. She was just there emotionally. She was there to encourage. She was there to have fun. We used to play. We used to go to the shop together. We used to talk together. Like, me and my mum, we are very, 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 very close. And I feel that growing up, there was always this feeling of I had to prove my dad wrong. Because he was very much on the education side of things.
Okay.
And so because I wasn't doing well educationally, I felt like he felt like I was a failure. And so for me, I had to prove him wrong. And I had to prove my mum right. And again, these are the motivations and things that drove me to achieve what I was able to achieve at such a young age. Now, growing up and having kids, me and my dad are very, very, very close. He is probably one of the first people I will call when I'm in a situation, even if I have an argument with my wife, even if I have an issue in regards to my kids. He's been there. Sometimes you think that it's a different generation, but a lot of things repeat itself, just in a different way. And my dad is able to add wisdom. He's a great granddad. Like, you know, my kids love him. He's a great granddad. And I know he puts it in to be with my kids. Sorry, because he wasn't able to be around for me.
Yeah.
And I used to almost poke at him for not being around. But I understand the sacrifices that he had to make so I could be around. And I understand that it's going to be even better for my kids when they have their kids. They're going to be able to be even more present. Because the burden is going down because we're able to build, I stand on my dad's shoulders today. And I feel like a lot of the time we don't appreciate the platform. We don't appreciate the abuse that this man used to go through in life. Having a slight accent and being in these work environments and people feeling like they're better than him and having women managers that will talk down to him because because the black man is meant to be so strong and now they're in a position of power and he had to go through these situations in order for me to be able to have the platform that I have today. So for me, I look at my dad and he's my hero. And then I think about how many of my friends didn't even have a dad.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff right there.
I had one of my friends, he bumped into his dad at age 20-something. Bumped into him. And only because we recognised a picture in the mum's house. It's like, oh, my dad. And they're still trying to build that relationship. Like, I had a dad that was there, that used to take me to church, that used to tell me off, that went to my teacher parents' evenings, was interested in my education and encouraged me to be in church and do stuff for God and, you know, take God serious and prayed for me. And when I got my first car, he sat in the front seat and prayed over that car to make sure I didn't get into any accidents. I had that dad. So sometimes we can go through things and have an issue. And you can always spot the bad in life. You can always focus on the bad. But for me, I like to focus on the good. I like to focus on the inspiration I take from that man and all that he's been through. And say, he did that, so I don't have to go through that.
That's important. That is so... Yeah, you got me lost for words, man. No, I think what's powerful about that is because I think on the podcast we've had so many people talk about their fathers not being physically present or being present but not emotionally present.
Yeah.
And it's always important. I think it's always one of those things. It's always hindsight that you realize the sacrifices your parents actually had to go through for you. Like you said something about that. For most people, they say, well, that's not an active father. But he was studying so he could get to a position to provide for family. But he made sure, like, the thing about, I don't know, people, once he said, I visualized it, when once he said the experience with the car and sitting in front, listen, it wasn't even me, and I felt that.
Come on.
Just imagine your dad just there. Like, we all have our different histories and all different experiences, but there's something so powerful about
having someone,
a man, a male figure.
Yes.
Showing that you matter to me.
Come on.
In your life, you're in my life. And this is why I really, like, I know most people would when reading this or seeing that you're on the podcast, they probably would so focus so much on the financial part of it. But this is a very important area that people often miss. He was able to create such a wonderful memory for you, experiences for you, that even whilst you're talking to him, you're evoking emotions in me, man.
No, trust me, it's big.
It's beautiful. And I hope to all the listeners and anyone watching or listening that you just take this in, that I think sometimes it comes from forgiveness as well. Because you also mentioned about for a long time you were doing it to prove him wrong.
Yeah.
But see how that transitioned. And one thing I'd like us to just go through, I know we're running to the end of time, but I want us to just kind of, because I always encourage men to heal. That's one thing I'm big on. Because I know people that their fathers weren't there, but they worked so hard, they're just financially stable now, you know, and never, they just want to say the line, you didn't help me get this, I never needed you to do any of this. How could you advise men that have cut off relationships or just don't want to even address those relationships with their fathers? How would you advise them to work around that?
You know what? I think it's so important. One of the things I would say to people is that a lot of the time, that pain is justified.
Mm.
It's justified. Trust me. Me and my dad had we had a big conversation, tears. But at the same time, I have to look at the good that this man did. And I think what you said about forgiveness, sometimes you have to forgive. Because if not, you'll be surprised. Because I'm going through therapy now. Do you know what I mean? And you'll be surprised if you don't forgive how the cycle repeats. How the things that you hate about your father, and you will say, I'm gonna make sure I'm different. In its own way, you will do the same thing, just in a different way. And for me, it's so important that you heal, you forgive, and you break it so that it doesn't carry over. So you don't pass that on. For me, having a father in my life, especially in this world, let's be honest, it's not easy being married. I'm going to tell you, it's not easy being married. Mm. And then you try being on social media, being on the TV. I tell people, look at me. I was an athlete them times. And I'm talking about all the girls I had. I had flat stomach. I was in good shape. I didn't have no gap in my teeth. I was wearing contacts, perfume in my bag. I was living in my mom's house, so I had bare disposable income. Mm. Today, I get more girl that moved to me today than I did those times. Now that I'm married, and I need you to understand that having a father figure, someone who has stood by my mum for all these years, committed, I understand the foundation that I want my children to live in and be in. I understand that if my dad would have buckled to the temptation that was probably around him and left my mum, today there might not be no E-man effect. That's the impact of my father. I understand that instead of the ground being shaky like it was for others, I got to grow up on steady ground, on a firm foundation. When we talk about the house on the sand and the house on the rock, my life was built on the house on the rock. And that's why today I'm here, I'm financial advisor to the nation. Because of the foundation that my dad provided, I know it took sacrifice. I know it took him probably not living to the things that he might want or even deserve. And so today I say to myself, my dad did it for me. I need to do it for my children. But that comes from a place of forgiveness, because I know he didn't do it perfect.
Yeah.
And even me, I won't do it perfect. Even as much as I've learned and I will try and do it as good as I can, my children will still have a complaint. They will still have, my dad didn't do this or do that. But I know I'll give him my best. And they'll do better for their children and so forth. And to me, that's what helps me sleep at night. That's why I can't mess this up. Because it's beyond me. If I mess this up, I mess all my dad's hard work, all my mum's hard work to come here. I mess all of that up. And then now my kids are, I'm visiting them every other weekend. Why? For sex. How long is sex? 10, 15 minutes. You've ruined your child's life. You've taken away that steady foundation. You now have maybe other men around your children. You're now bringing other women around your children. Why? And so for me, it's so much bigger. Once you start bringing children into the mix, you really have to understand the sacrifice that you need to make. And having a father that I can lean on and start, like, Dad, how did you cope? My dad will tell me. Sometimes my dad will tell me, son, when you lot went to sleep, I got closer, I will cry. There were down days, but I could never let you guys see. And I know today, there were sometimes me and my wife were going through things, and these kids are jumping up and down, eating Cocoa Pops and cereal and making mess. They haven't got a clue. And thank God for their innocence. Thank God that they don't have to feel the pressure. They don't have to grow up too early. That's what it takes to be a man, to be a father, to be a husband. Some of us are burdening our kids with our problems and forcing them to stop being kids and start being adults. And my dad never did that to me, and I'm not going to do that to my children.
Yeah, man, I don't... no, man, I don't... I gotta keep its eyes dry, but, you know... that's powerful, man. Can't be making me lost for words about this anymore. It's important. I think it's a great place to end it on, because I think when it's all said and done, like, the money's good and all of that, being financially, you know, provider, but you said something even earlier, provider is more than just finance. It's being there, emotional support. I love the things, because we covered so much. You talked about being a friend to your wife so that she actually feels a presence. And I think a lot of men are, unfortunately, in this world where they are being told that you're either an alpha male or beta male.
Yeah.
They think that, let me just be the alpha male and be toxic. And as long as I have the money, my value's up. And a lot of them don't get married.
Facts.
Or get into marriages and just, the first thing in their mind, let me get prenup. Because they're not even planning to stay. They just want to tell themselves to tick the box.
Bro, it's crazy. What you just said is so true, and it's so sad that we feel that we have to be in a box. That's why when someone tells me what's a man, I can't tell me it must be alpha or beta. I'm being the best version of me. I'm already a man. So now I just got to be the best version of me. I ain't got to be alpha. I ain't got to be beta. I got to be the best version of me. And that is a daily process. Every day I'm working on being a better version than yesterday.
Yeah, honestly, I love that. Being the best version of you. And if you're honest with yourself, we can all be honest with ourselves and know what we should be doing, what we shouldn't.
Of course.
And it makes it so much more clearer, because you can lie to anyone else but yourself.
Mm. Exactly.
So if you strive to be the best version of yourself, you won't go wrong.
Can't.
And I just want, because I know normally you offer financial consultants and advise, financial advice and things like that. But we have some plans for 2022, and I'm looking forward to having speaking to you about it. Is there any way that people can reach out to you? Because I know that you said something that is very humbling for me. Like you said that you listen to anyone, older or younger, accomplished or less accomplished. For people that are just finding this, and of course, I'm sure they'll later find out about your consultancy with financial advising, how can they get in contact with you, or how could they get in contact with you for these advice?
Yeah, I mean, social media, Instagram, you can DM me on Instagram. You can reach out to me, connect to me on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm here. Like, I'm just here. Like, do you know what I mean? I'll try and give anybody a moment or try and point anybody in the right direction. I do say try and do your own research. Like, sometimes I get people like, E-man, I don't know what to do in my life. Like, hello? Like, I ain't got time to start breaking that down. If everybody asks me that question, what time will I have to do what I need to do? Do you know what I mean? Mm. But I get people that message me, you know, I can tell they've done their research, they can tell, and they just need some guidance on, or who should I connect with, or do you have point me in this direction, or, you know, I need this or whatever. And I can try and help and support as much as I can, or connect you to somebody that can help. You know, luckily, doing what I do as a financial advisor, I meet some of the most successful people in the world. Like, and you know what I mean? I meet successful Black people every single day. They're my clients. And so I'm able to point people in the direction of, you know, solicitors, lawyers, these types of things. And I try and open my network because we are stronger together. Absolutely. And I think that's something that we forget. If I, just naturally, if I help you, forget whether you could help me. If I help you, when the opportunity comes, you will help somebody else. That's how we win. It's not necessarily that I must help you, so you must help me. No, I need you to know that if I help you and you help somebody else, you're helping me, because now we are stronger.
Personally.
Because it's about we. Too many individuals, millionaire, billionaire, whatever, that don't win. We don't win that way. Just some of us, the very few. I'm not in that. I'd rather have less and we have more.
Mm.
Because then it's worth more as well. Then now we are stronger. Now we are in rooms. Now when my child wants to go for an interview, they go in and the person interviewing them looks like them. Because we are stronger. We are now in the position of power. We are no longer relying. When I think about, you know, I go to a Chinese restaurant and I see everyone's Chinese. And I say, oh, okay. So if I need to get a job and I'm a student, I know where I can go. I know they'll understand me. Are we creating the businesses? I always tell people, we got to create these businesses. Because these businesses are going to give we're going to get a chance. If you don't hire my son, I know it's not because they're Black. Just we're good enough. Okay, cool, I can accept that. We don't have to worry about, and we're not getting it because of this or because of that. No, we are creating and we are building. We are stronger together. But you have to ask yourself, are you ready to do the work? Are you ready to change your life? And that's where it starts. It starts with you. So before you start reaching out to people and network, work on you. Make sure you are ready for the things that you're going to hear and you're ready to put in action. Because when I went to go and chill with the elders when I was at Barclays, I was ready. When they told me to do, I did it. Because I was at a place where I'm ready. I understand the opportunity. I understand I want to be like you. So when you tell me, I'm going to listen and I'm going to take the best parts of what you give me, add to the best parts of what I have, and I'm going to evolve. I always say it's like Pokemon. When the Pokemon just gets up to the level and evolve, just turns into this new beast.
Yeah.
That's what I did. I continue to evolve. I take the best of those around me. I add it to what I've got. And there's a new version of myself. One of the biggest things that's killing us is being real. And I'm going to end on this one. There's nothing real or keeping it real. Bro, be you. Be you. Too many of us are on this, I got to talk like this. I got to be like this. I've got to walk like this. I come from this. So we act like this. Forget it. forget it. Be who you want to be. Because guess what? Every day I'm me. So I never have to try and remember what I said yesterday. I never have to try and remember what I said yesterday. Because whatever I said is what I said. Because I was being me. And this is why when I go on podcasts, I don't look at the questions. I don't need to. I'm being me. I'm not trying to be rehearsed. I'm being me. So I know if I go on another podcast next week and someone asks the same questions, they're going to get the same answers. Because I'm being genuine to who I am and what I believe in. I'm walking for me. And so when I meet people and they think, oh, I don't really like what you say or what you do, that's fine. I'm not defined by your opinion. I'm not defined by your thoughts of me. My only competition is me. And I want us to understand we are better together, we are stronger together, but first we must get to the point of understanding us. You are your superpower. You are the only version of you, and that is your superpower. Now go use it. Could you imagine Superman being able to fly and then always walking? That's what we do. We got our superpower. But we want to be like everyone else. We want to look like everyone else. We want to dress like everyone else. We want to go where everyone else is going. That's not your superpower. Find your superpower. And your superpower is being the best version of you. You are the only version of you. So when you don't win, you let yourself down. Forget everyone else. Yourself down. That's why we're here. That's what I'm trying to do. And guess what? Now I get these young kids that I never met in my life. I had this guy tell me, E-man, because of you, like, I want to be an expert too. I've never seen somebody like me be an expert on TV. So I like science. I'm going to be an expert in science. I'm going to be on TV too. And for the first time, I was able to tell my man them. And they laughed at me. And then I said, But E-man's an expert. And they're like, no, you're right. E-man is an expert. And they stopped laughing. All because I decided to be the best version of myself and not conform to what others thought of me.
That's powerful. Thank you so much for that. It's been an amazing time speaking with you. And I'm looking forward to many more conversations because all in all, I've been blessed. Like, this went from a workshop to a sermon to a conversation. Listen, bro, you did the whole round. And yeah, you touched some areas that I thought I dealt with. But I guess we continue to grow and it's a constant work. But it's cool. Been amazing. Thank you so much. Because I know it's been up and down with the kids and changing times and things like that. But having you here has been a blessing. And I'm so excited for people that are going to be listening to this or watching this. And listen, I could keep going on. We could have this conversation for an extra hour because it's amazing to have you here. And I look forward to building a strong friendship with you because you're that guy. You're actually that guy. And it's, thank you. I unapologetically saying you're amazing, man.
No, thank you, my bro. Thank you for creating the platform. Like, I get so many podcast requests and I'm like, oh, should I come this, that? But when I see what you're about, what you're trying to do, it's different and it's important. These are the conversations we need to be having. And I hope from being vulnerable and being open that, you know, it helps somebody else to look at themselves and say, okay, cool. I might need to look at that. And that's how we grow. So thank you for taking the time. I know the effort it takes to put this stuff on and, you know, rescheduling and booking and creating it and then editing it and all of that type of stuff. So I appreciate the work and, you know, God continue to bless you and your family and all that you're trying to do. And yeah, bro, I look forward to more conversations and yeah, let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. And just once again, guys, make sure you go and follow him on Instagram, The E-Man Effect. You will see him on so many TV, so many platforms. But most importantly, don't let the things that you've heard here just be something you've heard. Actually put it to practice because even me, I'm going to be listening to this. I'm going to be having conversations and coming back to you. Let's actually take things in and act on it. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been amazing.
Thank you, bro. Take care.